Rydych chi'n gwrando ar y podlediad Pen and Paper Theatre. You are listening to the Pen and Paper Theatre podcast. Hello, Shamai Jordan here, founder and director of Pen and Paper Theatre and host of our podcast. It is so great to be back as we start to see the light at the end of the tunnel for what has been a truly incomprehensible year. Theatre has taken a real hit, but we are resilient and we are coming back fighting. Thank you so much for all our listeners who have been supporting us from the start, and welcome to all our new listeners and followers. Your support, comments and love has really kept us going. But talking about support, did you know you could support Pen and Paper Theatre by donating to our Ko-fi, helping us to keep creating content and prepare for when we are able to get back into the rehearsal room? So if you want to donate, head over to www.ko-fi.com/Pen Paper Theatre and donate today for less than the price of a cup of coffee. We are really missing theatre, and we're missing the feeling of live performance and what that gives you, and the relationships that rehearsals create. But one of the best things about theatre and performing arts is potentially its ability to provide a platform for us to express ourselves. It gives us a safe space to explore our emotions, experiment with our imagination, create and curate worlds while helping us to develop our own unique voices through creative curiosity. Each discipline engages our brains, bodies, and emotions in different ways, allowing us to find joy in self-expression and discovery. However, as a profession, ask anyone and they will tell you finding work in the theatre and performing arts sector can seem impossible. So much so that many potential actors give up their dreams before even trying. And that can be even harder if you have a disability. Our industry is really taking positive steps to be more equal, diverse, and inclusive. And as this week is World Autism Awareness Week, we are catching up with Welsh actress and my good friend, Emma Stacey. Welcome, Emma. It's so lush to have you join me today, albeit virtually.
Hello, Jordan. Yes, no, thank you very much for having me. It's nice to see you, even virtually, but get to have a chance to talk to you and to everyone about the amazing world of autism, and especially during Awareness Week, where it's really, really important to give it a voice.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you're no stranger to us here at Pen and Paper Theatre, but for those who are listening, do you mind just sharing a bit about you, your experiences as a performer?
Yes, of course. Well, I've known you, we were just discussing this, now coming up to 3 years, which has completely flown by, because I started with you when I first auditioned for Lunch, which we performed, and it was amazing. It was a really intimate performance with, like, what, 50 people in the audience over the space of a few nights, and it was just two of us on a bench, just performing out, and it was incredible. What a feeling that was. And then now with Revamp, playing Agrafena, which I am extremely excited about, and it's been 2 years in the works and we're still working on it, but we'll get there. That's been amazing, and I can't wait to bring my boss lady creature of the night into full fruition. And yeah, so been doing that with you for stage and for theatre. I've been doing TV and film acting for coming up to almost 5 years now, which is also flying by, especially when you spend a year not doing anything. So between that and doing some modelling, and I've also been working on some stunt work and doing training with that, and sort of writing skills, which I can't wait to get back to. But yeah, just all accumulating into this wonderful creative arts world, really.
Yeah, and you know, it's fab to see so much things going on, and I love it, especially on social media, seeing the images, the videos, and just those little snippets of things that you're doing. She's so busy always, even in lockdown.
Yeah. try and keep it as busy as I can. Keeps me sane.
Yeah, and as well as that, you've done some really great stuff over lockdown with your creative packs, and you're doing Easter boxes at the moment, and it'd be lovely just to hear a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, of course. During the first lockdown, as everyone knows, everyone, I think, was just finding it extremely difficult, mainly because you don't have something that you can focus your energy into. And being of a creative mind, I personally struggled a lot, and finding an outlet and a way to be creative, whether that's acting or possibly creating something, that's where my kind of passion lies. So because the acting was on stop and because everything in the industry was put on hold, I decided, why not help as many people as I could? And I started creating little craft packs for all the local children who were no longer able to go to school and had that normality taken away from them. So me and my sister decided to put together craft packs, which were full of learning equipment, learning sheets, work booklets, making things, pieces. And the way that we done it was they had like a little bit of an outline of what they could do every 2 weeks. We were putting these out and they were doing the worksheets, and they were doing, like, one of them was build your own toy rocket out of a toilet roll holder, and we provided all the stuff for them to make that. So we just getting arts and craftsy and putting handprints covered with paint on some paper, and it was just giving them a chance to do something, be creative and have a little bit of fun to have a home when they weren't able to have it in school or wherever they were learning beforehand.
Yeah, and you know, it's really important for us actually that when we're looking at our own well-being and support our own well-being, that creativity is such a big influence on that. And just those packs and you delivering so many of them, it made such a big impact to your community, but also it was recognised everywhere really. So, and for me, I just want to say thank you for that, because it was really inspirational just seeing that over social media. But it's great to see, and it inspired a lot of people then to continue working creatively, but also to make a difference to their community and that way of well-being, that give part of it. So that was great. It's really lovely. So thank you for sharing that. We do need to recognise that things aren't always easy. And with it being World Autism Awareness Week, we are talking about autism, our industry, and how we can make those key steps into becoming a more inclusive industry that celebrates diversity, our communities, and being different. And the coronavirus pandemic has been particularly tough, especially for neurodivergent people and their families. Services have closed and many people have been left without their usual support, and with the ever-changing guidelines and restrictions, it is particularly confusing, especially for those who have higher needs. But as we do come out of lockdown, we know things will start to get easier, but changes need to be made now when we return as the performing arts, theatrical theatre, film and TV industry. So let's get straight down to business. You have a diagnosis of ASD. What does that mean to you personally?
It means a lot of things, if I'm honest with you. I didn't get diagnosed until quite late on. I was 18. I always knew that something wasn't 100% typical or the same as me and everyone else who I was in school with or who I interacted with, because I was always the type of person that got along much better with older people or even the teachers, to be honest with you. And I struggled in school a lot. Academically, I struggled very badly with my A-levels, because the step from GCSE to A-levels with regards to how it's taught and how you learn are completely different. And that almost stopped me from going to university, because I didn't have the support that I needed because I was so late getting the diagnosis. But it's, once you do get the diagnosis, in my own head, it kind of just give me an idea of, oh, I'm not losing my mind. There is a name for it, and there is a reason why my brain works the certain way that it does. And I am normal. It's just, my brain just processes things slightly differently compared to the neurotypical person. That's been, I think, a big thing for me to kind of deal with, was it being given a name and me being able to research and find out about it and find out about how certain aspects of my life have been impacted from it. It displays it with anxiety, with panic attacks. I've got really bad OCD. And with regards to that, I really, really work well with a routine. So when something like a global pandemic happens and the routine goes out the window, it kind of starts to put things in a bit of a struggle. So that was hard work for anyone, but especially someone then who has a bad relationship with being out of a routine.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for sharing that. And it's a really honest look at that, isn't it? And this idea of routine and how important that can be just for normalizing your everyday life, whether it be through actually your actions, but also the way that you work and the way that you perceive the world around you. So thank you for sharing that. And it's really interesting. And I know we mentioned before we started recording that there's a lot of information about how creativity, performing arts, drama supports young individuals with an ASD diagnosis, but there's not very much about actually performers in the industry who have ASD or have a diagnosis. There's always rumored things, but so for those people who don't really know then, in your own words, what exactly is ASD?
ASD is a spectrum. That's the best way to put it. You're not on a flat line of you have it or you don't. It's a circular spectrum that presents itself in so many different formats. Like I just explained, I myself struggle with social interactions over a longer period of time and maintaining relationships and friendships. And I struggle with anxiety and then also with the OCD and everything. But my sister, who also has ASD, she presents it through, she used to be extremely aggressive. And she had to learn how to deal with that aggression because it was frustration, it was more than anything. So she deals with that, and also her learning is massively impacted. Compared to myself, her learning is really severely impacted and she needs a lot of help to get the understanding of what most people would find extremely easy. Then there's other people then who are nonverbal, other people who, I including myself, have sensory issues. So I get overwhelmed with big crowds. So whenever I go to Tesco's, I put in headphones because I can't deal with the noise. A lot of people wear noise cancellation headphones, which helps massively in big big crowds and groups. And it can present itself in meltdowns if you're having a bad time, but then it can also present itself in extremely high functioning and really smart people. I've seen people who can have one look at a skyline and draw it from memory. Like, I wish I was that good. I'm not. But you get those people that are absolutely incredible. Yeah, but that's the thing. And especially having ASD, a creative outlet is one of the biggest helps with regards to any kind of just health and therapy. It is a way for us to relax ourselves, to express ourselves if we can't express it in words. That's how we put out our views into the world and how we create something that people can understand at a level that we can't communicate on.
Yeah. Fab, thank you for that. And the reason I asked you to do that in your own words is because when you look at the definitions or you try just Googling, like, what is ASD, you get such an array of big words. And quite often those words, they sound correct and it sounds right. And I'm just going to read the one that's here. So autism spectrum disorder, ASD, is a complex developmental condition that involves persistent challenges in social interaction, speech and nonverbal communication and restrictive repetitive behaviours. But that to me is just, it sums up in a very sciencey way. So to hear it from yourself and breaking it down that actually this is what it looks like, this is what it could look like, or actually it's very different. I may have ASD one way, but somebody else will have it in a very different way. So thank you very much for sharing that. So what about in our industry?
You're very welcome. Artists,
so what about in our industry about, like, so being performing artists, what does it mean to be autistic or on the spectrum then within theatre, within film, within TV?
If I'm being completely honest, initially I didn't pop it on my Spotlight page. I didn't tell anyone that I had ASD. I was not, to a certain extent, I was self-conscious because people would perceive me as, oh, that's Emma, she has ASD. Not, that's Emma, she's a nice person or she's a good actress. And then the ASD come last. Yes, it's a part of me, but it's not me. And I think a lot of people are scared to be open and honest and put it out there for people to possibly judge them. But as soon as I started, it was mainly from my sister, seeing my sister struggle with who she was and be comfortable talking about it. I thought, you know what? There needs to be more people out there that are fighting for people with ASD to have a voice. Why shouldn't I be pushing the issue? I've got a platform. I need to use it. So as soon as I thought that, I went straight on the spotlight, put in actress with ASD. I've got it on my Twitter profile. I've got it everywhere you can think of. And I'm trying to promote it as much as possible because we are just people with passions, with desires, with ideas. And just because we've got a label as such shouldn't stop us from being able to achieve and do exactly the same as someone else.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it's interesting you use it, it's that word label, isn't it? There's so much within diversity. Anybody who has something different, there's a label that goes along with it, when actually you're just a person, and your experiences, your history, your life is vital to the rehearsal room. And I'll open to say, like, as you said, you didn't put onto your spotlight. It was something that came very much later into our rehearsal process, wasn't it? I didn't know that you had ASD, and I never even thought for one moment that was something that I need to know either. But it was in conversation about, like, where my work history was, but we had that conversation, and it is almost as if there's like a relief, isn't it? That you're being able to actually be exactly who you are. You're not having to hide anything, but knowing that there's lots of support available, I suppose, it does relax you. But at the same time, for me, especially as an LGBT person, I always try to think that actually my labels as a gay man doesn't actually have anything to do with my work. But people like to put that, oh, it's a queer theatre maker, or it's an autistic theatre maker. They like to put those labels in front because it makes it easier sometimes. But yeah, thank you for sharing that again, because it's really interesting. And that I think something that's really interesting at the moment anyway is Greta Thunberg. And I'm really following her work, and I've got a real big passion for sustainability and making our industry more sustainable. But Greta Thunberg, who we all know and have heard lots about, she was someone tried to discredit her and used her ASD, well, her at the time it was Asperger's, against her, and tried to use that to discredit her voice. And she wrote, it was a tweet, and she wrote, "I have Asperger's, and that means I'm sometimes a bit different from the norm. And given the right circumstances, being different is a superpower." And I absolutely love that. And I've worked with some incredible young people, and they have shown me that their differences truly are their superpowers. But when we talk about it as a superpower, it's as if, like, oh, look at me, I'm Captain Emma, and this is what I do. But it does give you, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, if you think that I'm barking up the wrong tree, but I think it does give you opportunities to look at things from different perspectives. And I think it does benefit you sometimes. So it'd be actually really good to actually hear about some of those positives and those benefits, because we can look very much at, actually, ASD does this to me, ASD does that to me. But what is the positives? What are the benefits from being ASD?
I suppose it's just, I know no different. That's how I've been since I was little. But it's just when you're able to compare them to people that you know who aren't on the spectrum, you think, oh, wait, okay, all right, I'm able to analyze things a lot more closely. And with my OCD, I pick up on every tiny detail. So I got to make sure that I'm an absolute perfectionist. I got to be thorough on everything. So that really helps me. One thing that I tend to do as well is I maintain eye contact. I tend to stare, which is something that I had to work on because I just wouldn't blink. Whereas a lot of people with ASD avoid eye contact. So that really helps me, because sometimes even when I'm not engrossed in something what someone's saying, because I'm staring, they think, oh, she's really interested. And I'm just like, no, I'm zoning out and disorientating a little bit, but I'm just maintaining eye contact, so everything's good. I just see the world just differently. Realize that you've had hardships with it, but I think that makes you appreciate the good times more, just like anybody else.
I think
if it wasn't for my ASD, I wouldn't be as creative as I am. And one thing that I have actually done loads of research on, girls who are diagnosed with ASD are extremely good maskers.
Yeah.
As soon as they are born, they learn to put on that facade that, oh, this is how everyone acts, this is how I need to act. So I've been technically acting since I was a baby, because you pick up social cues and you'd realize what you need to do, and that's how we've acted. Whereas at home, I'm completely blank face, my eyebrows don't move, my tone is completely monotonous. But as soon as I need to go out and I need to interact, I know that I got to put on that facade.
Yeah.
And I think that's why certain characters come to me so easily, because I'm able to swap and change as much as I need to, because I'm used to doing it.
Yeah. And masking is a really big thing, actually. And as you mentioned, it particularly, it's high within females. But even males, you notice that quite often a lot of ASD people will have accents or will copy certain social situations to the letter sometimes. And there's lots of people that I've worked with in the past, especially within theatre, who have ASD, and you always see that they can really imitate things perfectly. And for me, as somebody who I'm very bad at accents and I'm very bad at imitation, it's something that I was like, oh my god, like, it fascinates me, and I'm like, wow, I wish I could do that and learn like monologues step by step. But actually, it's one of those tools, isn't it, that is a protective factor as well.
Wow. It is. It's, and especially if you've got to be yourself. Like now, if you'd asked me to do this podcast with you 4 or 5 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Yeah.
Because I do not feel comfortable being myself in front of large crowds or on camera or anything like that. But it's something that I've just had to get used to, I suppose. And that was a big challenge initially.
Yeah.
Because you're being vulnerable, you're putting yourself out there, you're putting your real self out there for people to see.
Yeah, yeah. So what about on the flip side then? So flipping that coin over, and I think, again, we focus on some of the positives there, but how, especially within our industry, how do you think that being autistic on the spectrum has hindered you, or has it hindered you at all, do you think?
I think to a certain extent you can possibly end up getting typecast.
Mm.
They always need to have, whether it be the token LGBT character or the token disabled character, that they try to put that every single time now into all these different shows and theatre performances or TV. They're trying to incorporate that as much as possible. But it's like, no, why can't the character just happen to have Asperger's, not just about an Asperger's character or autistic character or ASD character? Why does the person need to have a disability at all? Like, if it with regards to ASD, if I'm able to act as a neurotypical person, why can't I get those parts?
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh yeah, you're playing the sister who runs the bank. Okay, well, I'm a sister who runs the bank. Does it make any difference if I've got any kind of neurodiverse aspects to it? I'm following a script and following your direction. Nothing's going to happen. So yeah, I think that can be bad, because they try to just only put you forward then for the ones that are labelled as ASD.
Yeah.
Which can be hard. And also one of the biggest things that I think everyone struggles with is not getting feedback or not getting a yes or no answer. Most yeah. people can do an audition and then they can walk away from it and be calm. Oh, no. When I first started, it would drive me insane to the point where I'd actually give myself panic attacks, worrying about a yes or no answer. And this could be for 3-4 weeks up to like 3 months, you wouldn't hear back, or you might not even hear back at all. And you've just got to get to the point where you're able to switch it off.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot to be able to do that for anybody, let alone someone who relies on not praise, but just relies on the unknown. You need to know a yes or no. You A why is always helpful, but a yes or no is always good. So at least you can mentally then block that off and move on to the next thing without it hanging over your head. And so that's something that I really struggle with.
That's really interesting. And thank you for sharing that, even for me. And I'm very aware that in the past when I've run auditions or created call outs, that you give that information, you go, oh, I'm going to get back to you in, you say X amount of time. And it's actually just made me realise that you expect it to happen in that time because that's what you've been told. And if it doesn't, it gives you the, oh, I haven't heard nothing, what's wrong? And so thank you for sharing that. Because
I'll be with you by 5 p.m. this evening, and then it's gone 5 p.m. and then it's 6 p.m. and then it's the next day and it just all blows out of proportion. Yeah.
Yeah. And even in my own practice, like I'm very aware, especially over lockdown, where I've been working on lots of different projects. I'm doing that at the moment where I'm going, oh, I'll get back to you in the next week, or oh, I'll get this over to you by the end of the day. And it's not happened because X, Y, and Z's happened. But sometimes I think, oh, it might be fine. It's fine. I'll message them later and just say. But actually, I think we as individuals there, and even as organisations, need to make sure that we're taking that thought and going, we've told this person by this time, if we're delayed, we need to let them know as soon as possible. So they're not just waiting on the end.
Letting know about it being delayed, that's great, as long as we know. And I think with everybody that would help, because we understand life happens, stuff happens, you end up being pushed back by however many hours or days, but just knowing where they are at is extremely helpful for our mental health.
Yeah. Crazy. I'd like to talk about, and you've touched a few points, so I'm going to come back to one point towards the end of the podcast, but I'd really like to talk about what people's perceptions are. And you've already mentioned things like typecasting and how you've got that person who is ASD and they've got to look ASD and they've got to act ASD. But what about people's perceptions, especially in our industry when we're working to a production? I think there's been some really fantastic productions that have really celebrated and respected ASD and other disabilities, races and differences in great ways, and there's some that haven't, but people's perceptions can be as they are. They're just a perception. So how has that been for you within our industry?
As soon as someone finds out that I'm someone who has ASD, the first thing that I get is, oh, you done muck it.
Okay.
Thank you. Do you want me to be bright green with a tentacle sticking out of my head with a big sign posted that saying I've got ASD? Sorry, it don't work like that. If it would, I'd have a tattoo just straight across my forehead. But it's like, what do you expect? Like, yeah, I'm a bit eccentric. I'm just quite bubbly, I think. But it's just people automatically think the complete opposite, usually, of what it ends up being. I don't know if I've actually been told, oh, I thought people with autism are nonverbal, sometimes, and mobile. I'm like, what Google are you searching on, mate? Because that is not true. Trust me, I don't shut up. So, yeah, it's strange. Or you get someone saying, oh, yeah, my next door neighbor's cousin's grandchild's dog's parent is ASD. I'm like, oh, fantastic. Yeah, I probably know one. Yeah, of course. but yeah, so you get that. And I'm like, okay, well, no, it's great that you've got some kind of a fantastic. I'm not expecting you to, but I'm here to do my job. Let's get on with it, you know? Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? But sadly, just like so many other differences or things that are outside that norm that that we call it, there is well-attached stigma to autism and ASD, whether that be through education, employment, relationships, and so much still across the media. And I don't mean like TV and film, but like it's there, and we see that perception or that thought of what people think it is. But even across our media and within like newspapers, on Twitter, on news channels, that stigma is still there. But in order for those perceptions, those assumptions to go, we need to recognise that we have to be those change makers. So as an industry, we say how we are committed to becoming more diverse, inclusive and representative of our communities. But What do you think needs to happen? What are those key changes that each organization can make?
Well, with regards to any organization that you're going into work with, whether you've got a disability or a mental health condition, they just need to be understanding of your needs. And I understand they're not all organizations or industries can provide what you're looking for, but surely there's a way that they can come to some kind of understanding and agreement and arrangement that'll help someone in their workplace where they're doing a damn good job. They could be fantastic and be the best thing that you bring into an industry or into an organization, but they're just not doing it because they're not willing to take that risk, or they're bringing them in but they're not using them to their full potential. And like even in the health industry, right, themselves, when I was diagnosed, I literally got given a book that said ASD and how to cope, here you go, good luck, and I didn't see them again. That was my interaction, and it was hard because I was like, okay, so I just got to read about myself in a book. I tried to look, I wasn't there, because they just give you the outline, like what you read earlier.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do with this? So any organization, like me now going into doing TV, film, theatre, the best thing I can ask, and I make sure that I have it on my contract, is I make sure that I'm able to have scripts sent through at a certain time frame before I go on to set, because I like to be completely prepared. I need to have it in my head and thoroughly like read through, just so I can absorb it. And that's something that's beneficial to me, and that's something that really helps me. And it's the same as giving someone a wheelchair ramp if they need that to be able to go up a flight of stairs or be able to go off and on a train. If they can just give those little bits of whether it's a bit of paper like for me, or if they can give that ramp, or if they can give something else that'll help somebody else, then that's all that needs to be done. We don't need to be handheld, and we are not going to ram it down someone's throat like, you've got to learn about this, you need to know everything about us. No, you can just come and ask us, and if you want to learn you can, but just know that by learning you're helping so many people, loads that possibly don't even know that they are on the ASD spectrum or any other kind of spectrum. They are helping them so much by giving that little bit of understanding.
Yeah, and you know, that's really key. You say understanding of needs, and actually you don't need to have a doctorate or a degree or a full understanding of those needs, but that conversation is so important. You mentioned that just come and speak to us, be open and conversation. And that can be quite, sometimes we are aware that can be quite a scary conversation, because you're scared that you're going to offend them or say the wrong thing. But actually we're still learning, aren't we? So that conversation, and from what you just said, is so important. And it's really interesting then as well, because you said about that's what you like to do. That's what's for you. Recognizing that not one size fits all. So what actually might really support you might not support another.
You completely hit the nail on the head right there, 100%.
Yeah, and it's nice to hear that though, because and at the end of the day, if we're not having those conversations, we're not going to get end up understanding. And as you said, if I did something for you, for instance, and then another person came in, I tried to do exactly the same for them, you may be thinking, yes, that's exactly what they need, because so and so needed it, or because it worked last time. But actually, as you said, it is a spectrum. There's so many needs on there that we can support. So having that conversation is something that I'm definitely going to make sure that I'm ensuring to do as an organisation, but again, as an individual. And I'm going to ask you the same question again, but I'm going to ask you on an individual basis. I've picked up loads of things already that I know I want to start putting into my practice, but what is that key thing that we as individuals can be doing? I imagine it's going to be the same or quite similar. But is there anything that sticks out?
Yeah, quite similar. Yeah. Honestly, the best thing that someone can do is just come and talk to me.
Yeah.
And that's genuine. That's no beating around the bush now. Some people obviously can find certain questions or anything triggering, but like when you asked me today, is there anything that you feel uncomfortable talking about? I said, no. Throw them at me, because the more people are willing to tell the good, bad, ugly, dirty truth, the better, because it's not all rainbows and unicorns. It's really not. Mm. There's a lot of dark places, but by acknowledging that, admitting that, speaking to people about that is what will help people gain an understanding, and not just saying, oh yes, I have ASD, I am this person, da la 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 la, everything's great. It's like, no, I might be having a really bad day with my OCD. If I someone that I trust was talk to me and understands me, I feel more comfortable going into work or going into wherever I'm going to be going, knowing that someone's there that I can communicate with.
It goes back to
or knowing that I can have my, yeah, and knowing that I can have that quiet time or be in a quiet place and not have people being like, oh, are you okay? Are you okay? It's like, no, I'm just dealing with something a minute. I'll be fine. Just give me 2 minutes, just do some breathing and I'll be back to it, you know? But again, like you just said, understanding. Understanding that not one single person, whether they've got a disability or any kind of difference to anybody else, no one is the same. No one at all. At the end of the day, we're all completely different DNA, different makeup, different genes, different mental states, everything. We're all completely different, whether it's, and well, it's just that's what needs to be acknowledged. And just because something's normal for you definitely does not mean that it's normal for your next door neighbour.
Yeah. Fab. Fab. And you know, I that understanding is really key. And I just want to come out actually that it's sometimes not a bad thing if you don't understand either, is it? As long as you're having those conversations to support that understanding, isn't it?
Completely. And it's better hearing it from the source than reading something online. I personally think I'd much prefer to come, like if I had the question about anyone on the LGBTQ community, I'd prefer and I'd feel comfortable knowing that I could come and talk to you and ask you a question rather than reading online and getting some Karen from Northampton doing a dissertation about it where she'd never met someone about it. Do you know what I mean? I'd rather come and ask you personally and have your opinion on it, which may be completely different to someone else who's in that community. But at least I gain understanding from you.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's really important, actually, that we do flip it on its head and ask those questions and make it known that what if, okay, yeah, so they have ASD. What if they're a gay person? What if they were a person of colour? What if they were someone from England rather than Wales? Like, we've just got to normalise it, haven't we? And normalise the fact that it is just a difference. Once we've asked those questions, we'll gain an understanding.
God, if you were more than one thing, you wouldn't be able to fit it all on your Spotlight page. It'd be full up of just labels. It's just like, no, just call me Emma, please. Although, it's ridiculous, man. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It gets to that point where you're just like, I have a
it is what it is for the time being until people change.
Yeah, yes. And hopefully we're going to come back and we're going to see that change. Well, at least we're making those changes and making those waves. And there's theatre companies such as like Taking Flight Theatre who are doing really great work, and Disability Arts Cymru, who, again, are really supporting organisations and individuals in understanding, making changes and making positive ways forwards. But I'm going to go back to, so you mentioned earlier about typecasting and being put into a role, but it's been a really hot topic over the past couple of months, maybe longer than that. Time seems like it doesn't go anywhere at the moment, but there's so many views and opinions around this subject, and I know it's a very tricky one to combat and but also to ask, but I think we have to really respect everybody's opinions on the subject. So I'm going to ask you, should actors and performers who are not neurodivergent or on the spectrum represent and play those ASD or neurodivergent characters? What's your thoughts on that?
I can't speak on behalf of every disability. That's not my place too. But as regards to someone with ASD, it helps massively if someone who has it is able to play that character because they've got that experience behind them. Mm. But if someone's able to act, surely they could play whatever character they want to. That's my personal opinion. Like, I don't know who was, I don't think he was ASD, but like Leonardo DiCaprio, when he was really young, he played that kid. I don't know if you've seen the film. Oh, I can't remember the film, sure, but I'll have to find it for you. But he played this kid who was neurodiverse, and oh my goodness, what a performance. What an absolute performance. He was sensational. And I would never be able in a million years to say if he was neurodiverse or not. If someone can play a part, I don't see the problem. Or if someone has a disability and the part doesn't call for it, say now if they're in a wheelchair, what's the harm in popping in the wheelchair? It just means that you've got to possibly lower your camera a little bit when you film in. Do you know what I mean? There's no difference whatsoever. But I understand why a lot of people are against it. I completely understand. But for me, if someone's able to do a damn good job of showing a story, then you show it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something that I've not refused, but I've been quite hesitant to talk about, to be fair, because it is, it's a really heightened conversations thing. Same. But for me, I'm very much on the same page as you. It's as long as there is elements there where that actor, that director, that dramaturg, whoever makes waves and makes their way into gaining support, advice, guidance, mentoring, consultancy almost. Oh, well, I say almost, definitely getting that consultancy there to really...
Speaking personally to someone who has whatever disability that someone's covering, they need to gain the knowledge 100%. They need to have that interaction, even if they got someone with it on set who's able to describe certain things, like the way that they would interact in the scene. That would be extremely beneficial.
Well, it's one of those things, isn't it? And we see it quite often at the moment, like from a young age, when you're in school, you see it with Lenny and of Mice and Men. There's that great play, and I do absolutely love it, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, with the character Christopher. But going back to TV on this one, and it being The Good Doctor, so Sean Murphy, Dr. Sean Murphy on there, the actor who plays him, he spent so much time working with a director who could really support him and actually representing neurodiversity and ASD in a respectful way, but also in a truthful way. And he went through so much consultancy and guidance and mentoring to get to the point where he puts it all into his performance there. And whether people agree or disagree with his performance, or liked or disliked it, at least he made those steps and he pushed himself to get that experience, so he could be as truthful as possible. It's like the method acting, isn't it, really? But yeah, thank you for answering that.
Yeah, I think he did amazing. Yeah, no, you're very welcome. No, he done an amazing job. But again, that's not the only part of ASD. There's so many different ways that it can be portrayed, but his portrayal of it, for what the character called for, was, I thought it was fantastic. I'm addicted to that show.
Yeah, it's the same. I very much enjoyed watching The Good Doctor and just going through the whole the seasons with it. But for me, you kind of forget, actually, that he is ASD. The character, it's about his ASD, but I was far more fascinated by the knowledge he had and was how he completely deconstructed everything. But yeah, this it leaves some really interesting conversations, and if it makes you more curious into the subject and into the area, isn't surely that's only a good thing.
Yeah.
But fab, thanks, Em. And you know, it's been so lovely just going through this through this podcast with you and being able to have such an open conversation. As I said, and before I said, I was like, oh, can you have a look at this? Just let me know if I ask some of these questions, are any of them offensive, or are you okay to answer them? And if you're not, I was really nervous about having this conversation because I didn't want to offend. And in my background, I've worked with a lot of young people with additional learning needs. I've worked in Bridging College for many years now as a learning support assistant. As a teacher, and even within the wellbeing team, we see a lot of people with a lot of needs. Even though I've got all that experience with working with those young people, I know there is a massive difference to working with yourself or working with other people and knowing that I have to have those conversations, yet I still get nervous. But thank you so much for being open and letting this conversation happen. It's been lovely.
And thank you as well for asking those questions, because they're questions that a lot of people are too nervous to ask. So thank you for starting up a conversation and allowing me to speak, not for everyone, definitely not for everyone, but speak at least a little bit on behalf of people with ASD in this industry.
Well, fab. Thank you, Emma. So just a big thank you to everyone who's listened to this podcast. And it's been really great having Emma on with us today and talk about neurodiversity within our industry. As we celebrate World Autism Awareness Month, please do check out some of the fantastic organisations across Wales and the UK that are really making leaps and bounds. And I've mentioned a couple already. So that is Taking Flight Theatre, the Autism Directory, the National Autism Society, Disability Arts Cymru, and find out how you as an individual or an organisation can make the positive steps to becoming more inclusive. Thanks again to you, our listeners, for joining us today. Don't forget to follow us where you get your podcast and give us a share across social media using @PenPaperTheatre. And if you want to donate, head over to www.ko-fi.com/PenPaperTheatre, where you can give for less than the price of a Java chip frap. So until next time, keep safe and keep following those safety measures so we can get back to the stage once again.